Okay, thank you. Okay, great. All right, so I'm Laura Kahn. I chair the Environmental Advisory Council. We'll do all the introductions of the other people and then we will do our guests. Dawn, you start.
Hi, Dawn Henning, Assistant City Engineer.
Iris.
Iris Kaminsky, board member.
Kathy.
Kathy Fay, secretary.
Florestine. Florestine, you ready?
Florestine Taylor, board member.
I was.
Great. Here. Thanks. Kevin? Kevin, are you talking? Okay. All right, well, that's Kevin. Kevin, if you want to talk in future, we can't hear you, but anyway. Okay, I see Doreen, who is a new appointee. Welcome to your first meeting, Doreen.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Let's go on. I don't see any more EAC members. Maybe there aren't any more. Let's go
Hi,
on.
Laura. I'm here.
Oh,
Kristen Gordon, council member.
Mm-hmm. Right. Sorry. I forgot. Thank you very much.
Oh, no Kristen worries. Gordon. I'm calling in. So
us too. Okay. Thank Fantastic. You. Thanks. Okay. Let's go on. Alex, introduce yourself, please.
Hi, I'm Alex Rodriguez with Save the Sound. I wanted to just thank you all for letting me jump on today. I saw an announcement of this meeting happening through one of Yale's newsletters yesterday. And so I wanted to jump on later to talk about the Transportation Climate Initiative.
I don't know if we'll have time for that. We have a full agenda, but you can put something in the chat. Jeannie?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Jeannie Dubino, and I am a concerned citizen and New Haven resident.
Thanks, Jeannie. Jean Connolly?
Hello, I've been working on the lights in the city, and I can't see. I can see you, even if you can't see me. And I can hear. That's all.
Great. I think your camera is pointed at your ceiling, but thank you. And thank you for working on that. And thank you for being here. Mary?
Hi, I'm Mary Woolsey, and I'm a New Haven resident, concerned very much about noise issues. And also backing up Alex Rodriguez about the Transportation Climate Initiative as being very important.
Great. Pavla?
Hi, I'm Pavla Rosenstein. I'm a New Haven resident, concerned about noise and environmental issues and working particularly on leaf blowers.
Great. Susan?
Hi, I'm Susan Klein. I'm a New Haven resident. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I've been active for a few months with Friends of Kensington Playground, and I know you a year ago wrote a wonderful letter in support of saving the playground, and I wanted to attend this meeting to thank you and also just to hear what's going on now.
Great, thanks. Sai?
Hi, I'm Sai Riala. I'm the climate and environment reporter for the Yale Daily News.
Nice to have you here. Aaron?
Hi, Aaron. Good. 702 Quinnipiac Avenue, New Haven. Greater New Haven Green Fund.
Great. Annie?
Hi, everybody. I'm a New Haven resident and, like you, concerned about noise pollution, environment, climate issues in general.
Great. Mary?
I'm another concerned citizen, just like so many others. And have a neighbor with a very loud weed blower.
Okay. And I see Madeline is here.
Hi, sorry, what am I supposed to say?
just your name and who you are.
I'm Madeline. I'm Laura's daughter and a New Haven resident.
And Madeline has just put the announcement sheet in the chat. And let's see, who else is here? So Kristen's on the phone and there's somebody else on the phone, at least one more person. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, Laura. This is Judy Scheifel.
Oh, hi, Judy. Sorry.
Hi. A New Haven resident, and I'm also currently serving as the interim director of the New Haven Port Authority while I do a search for a new executive director.
Great.
And I'm here to listen to what has happened since I've been away for the last 18 months.
Fantastic. Okay.
And I'm Karen Jubinek, and I am a physician at Yale, and I teach from home medical students, and I also represent first responders who many of whom who work third shift and need to sleep during the day.
Great. And Jeffrey, we didn't forget you.
Thanks, guys. Nice to be here. I'm Jeff Simon from the New Haven Solid Waste and Recycling Authority, here to talk a little bit about the our recycling event coming up in October.
Great. Okay. So I think Madeline put a copy of your poster in the document about the announcements, but if somebody can't find it and if you want to put it in again, that's fine. And if you want to make a very quick pitch for that, go right ahead and then we will get into our subject for the day. Thanks, Jeff.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. There we go. Yeah, I just want to say coming up October 23rd, I don't know if it's in the chat. Let me see. I'll put it up after I talk, but we're having a collection and information, sort of a learning event as well. It's at October 23rd. It's Hometown Recycling Day, and it's second in our tradition. Last year's went well. This one, we hope we'll do even better. It's going to be up on the Southern Connecticut State University campus, beautiful location on Farnham Avenue, and we're featuring, as we did last year, all items that are not acceptable in your curbside bin, usually the larger items. Some of these items are acceptable at the transfer station, but some are not. But this is just a way to get, you know, people, make it more convenient for people to drop off and also to learn a little bit. So we have mattresses, electronics, textiles, rechargeable batteries, and we have a shredding service, which is we're providing as an extra bonus to bring people in and get their documents shredded. We also have information on household hazardous waste, composting services, organics collection services, and curbside recycling, which is still some confusion about, believe it or not. And we're serving Westville, West Hills, Beaver Hills, New Hallville, Dixville, Prospect Hill, and all those neighborhoods, but of course, all of New Haven, all residents are welcome. Also this year, it's a big push since it's on the campus. We like that we're pushing for resident students to get more aware to participate as well. So I'll post that that flyer now. Thanks, folks.
Thank you. Okay. And so now I'm going to turn this over to Jamie Banks, who will introduce our guests. Thank you, Dawn, for noticing that we do have other guests here. We have four guests with us who are going to tell us everything we need to know about how harmful noise is. So Jamie Banks is the founder and president of Quiet Communities, and she is the chair of the Noise and Health Committee of the American Public Health Association. And take it away, Jamie. Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, thank you, Laura, and hello to everyone. Hi, Karen. It's good to see you. We're going to talk today. I don't know if we can tell you everything you want to know about noise pollution, but we'll certainly give you a taste of it. And we're here to answer questions and happy to work with you going forward. I'm going to share my screen, so bear with me for just a moment. Oh, can you make me co-host, Laura?
Dawn can. I'm not a co-host. Thanks, Dawn.
You just wanted to share your screen. You should be able to now.
Okay, yeah. That's fine. Okay. Okay. So I'm going to start out and talk a little bit about quiet communities, introduce ourselves. I'm here with three other colleagues. And then we'll talk generally about noise pollution, a little bit about the history of noise in the US, and then we'll touch on the leaf blower issue. We've done a lot of work in that area and on land care noise in general, in terms of supporting reasonable regulations, but also looking towards positive solutions. And we can touch a bit upon our newest program, which is called Quiet American Skies. And that's focused on aviation noise and pollution. So I first want to thank Laura, the Environmental Advisory Council, the city, and all of you that have joined today. Quiet Communities is a nonprofit. We're 8 years old this year. We have five programs, the Quiet Coalition. If you look on our website, you'll find the Quiet Coalition submits regular blogs on all sources of noise and regulations and other information, mainly targeted to policymakers and media, but also to help educate all audiences. We also do consulting work through the Quiet Coalition. Quiet Conversation, led by Rick Riebstein, who joined us today, is a program designed to bring together the public with policymakers and to try and bring tools of government and other solutions to the problems of noise and related pollution. Quiet American Skies, I just mentioned, focused on aviation. Quiet Healthcare is focused on acoustic building structures to improve patient outcomes, reduce medical errors. And finally, our Quiet Outdoors program, which is focused on land care and other outdoor power equipment industries. We're a 501c3, a nonprofit, and we are very much evidence-based. We're a science-focused organization. Apart from myself, I'm here with Arlene Bronzaft, Professor Emerita, City University of New York. She is the honorary chair of our Quiet American Skies project, also participates broadly with Quiet Communities and the Quiet Coalition. Sally Lusk is a member of my APHA Committee on Noise and Health, Professor Emerita, University of Michigan School of Nursing. And she is co-author of the American Academy of Nursing's position paper on environmental noise. If you all want to raise your hand as we go through, please do. And then Rick Riebstein's an environmental attorney. He's chair of the Legal Advisory Council of Quiet Communities and teaches environmental issues at Boston University and Harvard Extension School. I'll start with a definition of noise and environmental noise. Noise is unwanted and or harmful sound. The reason that and or harmful is here in red is because this is a relatively new addition to the noise. Conventionally or traditionally, noise has just been considered unwanted sound, really putting the burden on people who complain. People think it's a nuisance, it's just an annoyance, it's subjective. We know that it's much more than that and that it's a health issue. Environmental noise is a large subset of noise. It's the noise that occurs outdoors as a result of human and machine activity. There's many, many sources of environmental noise: aviation, vehicles, land care equipment, boats, other kinds of recreational equipment, motorcycles, construction industry. Many of these are related to fossil fuel consumption and internal combustion engines. It is a public health problem, and it's also an environmental health problem. It's also an environmental justice issue. Noise, environmental noise, has disparate impacts on low-income and minority communities. They're exposed generally to more environmental noise, louder noise, and there's greater exposure in specifically to road and air traffic noise in neighborhoods and public schools. What this leads to is poorer health outcomes in those communities, disrupted learning, diminished academic performance, and so forth. There is a history of noise regulation in the United States. I'll start out and just say in the 1950s and then articulated publicly in 1968, US Surgeon General William Stewart said noise is indeed a public health hazard, a matter of public health concern. Apart from hearing loss, it's been demonstrated that noise from aircraft and other sources causes physiological changes, including cardiovascular, glandular, and respiratory effects reflective of a generalized stress reaction. Here we are today, it is over 50 years later, and we haven't moved very far. In 1972, Congress enacted the Noise Control Act and gave responsibility to the EPA's Office of Noise and Control and Abatement to regulate, educate, organize research, fund, and provide technical assistance to states and localities to deal with noise. Following that was the Quiet Communities Act that filled gaps in the original legislation, noise control legislation. But unfortunately, in 1981, the Reagan administration defunded the Office of Noise Control and Abatement. And I can let my colleagues comment on some of this after I finish going through these slides. This infographic is from the US Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and it talks to how noise damages hearing. It creates sensory neural damage in the ear. This is damage that's irreversible. It can come from loud episodic noise. It can also come from chronic lower level noise. And noise is not just about hearing health. Apart from hearing damage like hearing loss, tinnitus, hyperacusis, which is acute sensitivity to noise, noise is also implicated in cardiovascular disease, metabolic disturbances like diabetes, increased anxiety and depression, and it is possibly linked to dementia and Parkinson's disease. Now, it's not intuitive how noise is linked to those other systemic disorders, but what happens in the body is that noise does cause an emotional response, annoyance, other kinds of cognitive frustration, all those different things. That in turn creates stress in the body and sets off a cascade of physiological events that increase the risk of disease. And this includes activation of the autonomic nervous system, the endocrine system, increases blood lipid levels, blood glucose levels, and all sorts of mediators that increase the risk of coronary artery disease, high blood pressure, arrhythmia, diabetes, and so forth. These mechanisms are now understood at the cellular and molecular level. And we know that noise is also about well-being and quality of life. Arlene Bronzaft, who's here with us today, pioneered a lot of the work on children's learning and cognition and the adverse effects of noise on those. It reduces work productivity, leading to costs, billions of dollars in lost productivity. It reduces quality of life and then increases healthcare and societal costs. We're all vulnerable to the effects of noise, but there are groups in the population that are especially vulnerable. They include children and adolescents, seniors, veterans with PTSD, people affected with neurological disorders, autism spectrum disorders, sensory processing disorders, hearing damage and attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder. And then noise also impacts our ecosystems. It disrupts animal communications and habitats. Animals that are trying to find reproductive partners or listening to the sound of predators can be compromised. So it negatively impacts health and vitality of wildlife populations. There was a study of, computer server complex and showing that bluebirds that lived in that area had thinner, more brittle shells, their eggshells. And the net result is that it reduces biodiversity along with many, many other environmental stressors. I'll touch on leaf blowers and land care equipment very briefly. We know this is very, very noisy equipment. There's also problems with emissions, fuel spillage, equipment vibration, all kinds of things that compromise the health of workers and also the public. I know that Chuck Elkin spoke to you. I think he may have touched on some of this, but we organized a study, a couple of studies. One we did with the Harvard School of Public Health. It was a pilot study to look at what characteristic of leaf blower noise is really most bothersome. Why are people bothered by it? And what we found in that pilot study was that there was a very strong low frequency component that allowed loud harmful levels of noise to travel over long distances. And you can see in this slide, this shallow sine wave. That's the waveform of this kind of noise. And leaf blower noise can travel many hundreds of feet and easily penetrate walls and windows. It has a strong low frequency and vibrational component, kind of like a boombox. We did a second study, a head-to-head study with a group of acoustic engineers. Both these studies have been published, basically finding the same thing. In that study, we compared electric to gas power blowers, leading commercial brands of both, and found the same characteristic true of the gas equipment, but not the electric equipment. We work with partners to find positive solutions and also support regulations. And while we support regulations of blowers, land care equipment, we realize that it's very hard to enact legislation. It can be even harder to enforce it. We're working on a variety of positive solutions that involve education, professional certification and training, procurement specifications. We worked with the state of Massachusetts and developed the first technical specification for commercial battery-powered lawn and garden equipment that was facilitated by the head of our legal advisory council, Rick Riebstein. And that's been successful in helping municipalities, public universities, and state agencies purchase this kind of equipment and start to transition away from fossil fuels. And we organize research. In terms of land care, technology is the pull here. Robotic, electric technology are paving the way. We always encourage the use of manual tools and are really trying to get professionals to make a behavior change, a change in the way they practice land care to reduce toxic emissions, reduce noise, fuel spillage, all of these impacts. And if they can do this successfully, treat this equipment properly, they can actually become more profitable and actually save money. We encourage clients to lead by example. I mentioned Massachusetts at the state level, their environmentally preferred products program. California has been a leader, especially with equipment exchanges, but also transitioning school districts, municipalities, et cetera. One of the municipalities is South Pasadena, California. There's others, Glendale, Ojai, California, or two, Mountain Brook, Alabama in the south. And then in the Northeast, Southampton, New York, and Lexington, Massachusetts. Those are some examples. Colleges and universities that we've worked with to transition include University of Southern California, Michigan State University, University of Massachusetts, public school districts, Compton Unified in LA, Yerba Buena, corporations, these are large pharmaceutical companies, Markland is a retirement community, and then businesses. We've worked with several businesses. There are now more than 200 operating in the US. It could even be closer to 300 or 400 at this time. And then we do work with residential neighborhoods and HOAs. This is an article that appeared in the Washington Post recently. I'd be happy to provide a link. It's about the work that we did in Mountain Brook, Alabama, to help that city transition its city operations away from gas-powered equipment. And this is the city of South Pasadena. Back in 2016, it became the first AgsaGreen Zone city in the nation. The entire city became an AgsaGreen Zone. Ags is our partner, the American Green Zone Alliance, and the Green Zone program is a structured program of implementation to make this happen. So just going back, I'll just end by saying environmental noise, it is a public health problem, a well-known public health problem. It's an environmental problem. And we're happy to work together with you to see how we can make our communities quieter, cleaner, and healthier places to live. Laura, if it's okay, I'd just like to invite my colleagues to add their comments.
Of course. And just a couple of things. Chuck Elkins did not speak to this group. He spoke to the Leaf Blower Committee. And I happened to Google Sally Lusk, and she seems to be quite a star. So if the rest of you are anything like Sally is, we are incredibly fortunate to have you with us. Thank you all for sharing your time with us. So yes, we'd love to hear from everybody.
I'll just say, Laura, I think we have 3 stars here. I'm happy to say so.
Great. I was sure.
I'll jump in just to say that noise is a symptom. When you hear noise, something often needs to be fixed, or there's a better design, or there's a better way to go about what you're doing. Just stressing that point that it's usually often associated with the use of small engines. Just want to draw your attention to the fact that not only have they defunded the noise control program at the federal level, but there also is preemption in the Clean Air Act against states acting to control those small engines. So while you're doing your work, think about how there's also a national movement that's necessary, how you fit into that. And related to that, I just want to say that what Jamie and I often try to do is get something going on a regional level and to bring communities together to talk about different strategies. New strategies need to be evolved. People are thinking about new ways to regulate. We have all sorts of opportunities with apps on phones that can measure sound and new systems for reporting complaints and new approaches that bring in homeowners and make them aware. And there's always the option of asking your contractor, a sort of cultural movement to ask your contractor to just go back to raking as much as they can. These are options that are open to everyone right now. So I just wanted to throw them on the table for your consideration. And the work you have done putting together that document is very impressive. Thank you for that and for letting us be here tonight.
You're welcome. Thank you. Jamie?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Who's next?
Arlene, would you like to introduce yourself?
You're muted.
Is there something that might be on that's not allowing Arlene to unmute?
I'm unmuting. I'm doing it right now. Okay?
Yes.
All right. Arlene Bronzaff, professor emeritus of the City of University of New York. And as Jamie noted, I did landmark research on the effects of noise on children's learning. I have many writings, including books, co-author of a book, Why Noise Matters, chapters on noise, and have been working on educating people to the dangers of noise, as well as doing research. So although I'm a researcher, an educator, professor, I'm also an activist. And when we discovered that noise affected children's learning, I worked together with the community, the press, public officials, and we got the noise stopped at the school. Anyone could look up these studies and see that once we found that noise affected children, we did something to stop the noise. And that's, I think, a very key message. I live in New York City. I serve on Grow NYC, which is a mayoral appointed board that deals with environmental issues, and noise is one of them. So if you go to Grow NYC, you get quite a bit of information on publications on noise, how noise affects people, and what you could do about it. I also assisted New York City in updating its noise code. And that's what I think you would be interested in, how we went about trying to update it. And we still have to update it even more because our last update was about 13 years ago. So what I'd like to say is that for the past 40 years, I know it's a long time, I've worked on doing research on the effects of noise so that people could be educated to learn how harmful it is to our mental and physical well-being, but also what they can do to try to reduce noise. Yes, the feds are out of the business of noise, very sad commentary, which was referenced earlier by Jamie, but local communities can do something. New York City had a noise code before they passed the Noise Control Act. New York City works on trying to get something done. Are we completely successful? No. But what I would like to encourage is that at a local level, you most certainly could do something. If in New York City, a study that showed that noise affects children's learning led to abating the noise on the elevator tracks next to the school and getting the Board of Ed to put in acoustical tile ceilings, and then using that method of abating noise on the tracks for all the schools in the city, as well as the people who live near the tracks, then I would like to encourage you and say, yes, indeed, you can at a local level do something about noise. And I thank you for inviting me. And since I've had experience on working with communities, not just in New York City, I've dealt with noise issues in Montana, Wyoming, Texas. Yes, they have noise problems there. I would very much like to work with you, and I wish you well. And I think what you're doing is terrific. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It sounds like you serve on the New York City equivalent of our board, because we are the city board that deals with environmental issues, and we are dealing with noise right now.
So, well, ours is a nonprofit. It's nonprofit. It deals with other environmental issues, but it showed you I'm appointed by the mayor to serve on the board. Nothing to do with politics. I have served for 5 mayors.
Wow. Yeah.
Different political parties. No politics. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We have been appointed by our mayors too, but we haven't served as long as you have, and it is the actual city board. So we will take a lot of cues from you if we may.
You certainly can.
Thank you for all your good work. Okay, back to you, Jamie.
And then Sally, can you introduce yourself?
Yes, Sally Lusk, and I'm a professor emerita from University of Michigan and have worked with the American Academy of Nursing for some time in trying to reduce environmental noise. And I've learned through this process that so many people. It may be that the Surgeon General knew about this more than 50 years ago, but those health professionals from a variety of fields don't even know about the negative effects on health. And of course, that's the part of the American Academy of Nursing's position on this was to help to educate all health professionals, as well as the public, to the risks from the noise exposure. And it's not only to the health, it's also a financial issue. One of the studies estimated that a small reduction in decibels would save $3.9 billion a year in healthcare for cardiovascular disease. So it would be a significant savings for our country as well. I also feel passionate about the environmental justice issue because we know that the communities of lower income and minority are often adjacent to or embedded in high noise areas. And we also know that there are a variety of health disparities with those communities. And so reducing the noise can only contribute to greater health. And of course, being a nurse, health is my focus. And I also wanted to thank Laura for your kind comment. And if we are stars, and I would say Jamie must be the Milky Way because she's got such a variety of of programs that she has going and she's made such great contributions. So I'm happy to respond to any questions or make any comments that would be useful. But I appreciate being here and it's wonderful what you're working to do.
Well, thank you so much. So I'm going to let Jamie do a little more, but I just want to introduce you to the members of the Leaf Blower Committee, which was started by Pavla Rosenstein. Pavla, why don't you wave or something so everybody can see who you are? And Pavla is being greatly assisted by Mary Woolsey, and let's see, do we have anybody else here from the Leaf Blower Committee whom I'm missing? Jeannie DiBino has sometimes participated a little bit, and Iris Kaminsky, our own EAC member, is very active on this committee. It is a pet peeve. Oh, and of course, the person who brought the whole issue of noise and leaf blowers to our attention in the first place, Karen, our own Yale ER doctor who can't sleep for all the noise. By the way, I heard a helicopter at 8:08 this morning. So I'm sure Karen and Iris did too, because they live in my neighborhood. Okay, Jamie, do you want to say any more about noise?
There's so much to say and we have so little time. I will mention something that we're working on. It's not, and Pavla and others, we're happy to talk to you about leaf blowers. We're doing a lot of work in this area. We worked with the Chucks group down in Washington, D.C. for several years to help them get legislation enacted and other communities as well, Maryland, up here in Massachusetts, out in California, at the state level and the local level. So please feel free to contact me. Laura, you know, we had that contact information and Laura can put us in touch. But one thing we are working on with regard to the Federal Noise Control Program is petitioning the EPA to get funds to carry out its mandate. Because even though the Office of Noise Abatement and Control was defunded, they are legally obliged to carry out their responsibilities. We submitted a petition in 2017 to EPA. The Trump administration, not surprisingly, did not respond. We are resubmitting a letter to the administrator about that petition and asking for a meeting to try and reactivate that program. So that's in general what we're doing. But I would say we're really here to hear your questions and see how we can be helpful and answer them.
Okay, thank you. Kathy has her hand raised.
I'm always the one who raises my hand first.
Good.
So I just want to thank everyone who's working on this issue, both our guests and also the folks on the Leaf Blower Committee. I have a dear friend about the same age as I am who, in her younger adult years, had exposure to a noisy fan in her workplace, and she developed hyperacusis. And now her life is severely compromised. Luckily, she ended up meeting a guy that also has the same affliction. And so they live in a silent world with earphones, noise canceling earphones all the time. And I don't know, I went to their wedding. It was a very quiet affair. So I just want to kind of point out that, the severe responses that some people's bodies have, they're real. And, I don't know that many people that someone actually developed that. But in any case, I guess my question is two things. One is, are there some sorts of OSHA regulations, I would imagine, governing workplaces, and how is that being enforced? And does that apply also to leaf blowers? And I'm thinking especially for the workers. I mean, I know it's a nuisance for everybody else, but I'm thinking, how does that work in the workplace?
Yes. I'll just jump in and say that it's very hard for OSHA to get out there and enforce contractors doing work for a few hours on someone's property. But there's also very few staff at OSHA these days. So not much to be expected there.
Sally?
Most of my research at the University of Michigan while I was active was focused on the workplace, primarily the auto factories. And even though the union supported the regulation, the supervisors had the authority to send a worker home if they didn't wear their hearing protection when they should be wearing it. It didn't happen. And even though Michigan has an OSHA, they would not be involved very often. And as Rick has said, they're spread thin and it's not actively monitored and oftentimes just ignored.
May I add?
Sure, go ahead, Orly. You're muted. Arlene, you're muted.
I'm muted. Okay. We're talking about legislation such as the Noise Control Act. We're talking about OSHA. Laws are on the book, but laws are worth nothing if they're not enforced. And what we have found in this country is that if you don't enforce certain laws, what you're really giving license to is to people to break other laws. And I'd like that point to get across. When a law is on the books and the government itself doesn't enforce the law, we have the government getting rid of the Office of Noise Abatement. The government is not enforcing it. We have laws in states and cities. And I speak as the wife of an attorney and the mother of three attorneys. Laws are important. And I want people to understand if laws are not enforced, you're giving the license to disobey any other law. And I think this is outrageous for our country to say it's fine to ignore laws, because that is essentially what the country is doing. May I add one other point? And that was a very good point Sally wrote up about cost. When I found that children exposed to noise were nearly a year behind in reading compared to children on the quiet side, that year had to be made up, and you make it up with cost. So that if the trains would go by noisily and the students were losing in reading, the cost to the city would have been increased because those children would have required remediation. It was far cheaper to quiet the tracks and put a noise abatement in. So it's not just cost is key. And if you look at the costs in this country, one of the major costs are medical costs. And you're right, cardiovascular disease increases when people live near airports, which means we are spending more on medical, we will be spending more on educational, and let's not forget the psychological. And so one of the arguments we should make is if we don't reduce noise, we're giving a license to disobey other laws, and we will have costs increased in other areas, especially medical.
Thank you. Thank you so much for bringing that up. I just want to let everyone know that we've been having public hearings concerning the expansion of our local airport, which is called Tweed New Haven Airport. And many neighbors of the airport have testified about the noise problem. And they even have had triple pane windows put in at taxpayer expense for them. And of course, it doesn't help. Now, I'm not going to get into whether I think if you buy a house near an airport, what you should expect, or if you buy a house in our neighborhood, whether you should expect five leaf blowers going on at one time. But anyway, yes, we definitely need to make people obey the laws concerning noise. But I've noticed that it's very hard to enforce laws about decibels because it seems quite ethereal somehow. Anyway, I'll let you go, Sally. Thanks.
Yes, I wanted to share an example of a city that might be of interest to you. Elkhart County, Indiana, employed a police officer whose sole job was to enforce the noise ordinance. And the tickets that he wrote more than paid his salary and benefits to the city. So there is the possibility of enforcing ordinances and being able to pay for it at the same time.
I'll just add to what Sally said. So Bradley Veet was largely responsible for getting that enforcement program in Elkhart, and he works with us. And I know that he has a presentation, you know, on how that came about and the success, you know, of the city in having a profitable enforcement program, if you will.
Go ahead, Iris.
Yeah, okay. Florestine, too. I wanted to say something.
Okay, sorry. Iris, then Florestine.
So I was really surprised to get a pushback from some of my neighbors. Some I just got triggered by the noise and I would go out and take a picture of their gardener and they would be upset. And the others, I asked them that I'm friends with and I just asked them if they would consider telling their gardener, please do not use the leaf blower because it makes so much noise. And the woman in one of the cases was really defensive and she said, you know, both me and my husband are working full time and we decided to take a gardener. And I didn't want to go into that conversation about, you know, I didn't want, so it went, I thought I would talk with a few neighbors and the whole street, like 16 households would just say, oh, sure, let's make a coalition and not have leaf blowers just in our block. And I have alienated myself from quite a few. And that was not my intention. Do you have any recommendations or what, you know, I'm just right now, okay, let's have a little bit noise for half an hour, be upset for half an hour and that's it. And wait until it moves on.
Okay. Rick, do you have something to say before Florestine makes her comment?
Well, just very quickly, we've been talking about enforcement. I think it's important to think in terms other than enforcement. I'm getting a feedback. Are you hearing me okay?
We're getting feedback too.
All right.
Sorry. Go ahead. what else do you suggest besides enforcement? Because I would like something besides enforcement too. It's hard to get people in New Haven who have so many things already to enforce to think about enforcing noise problems.
I just think it's important. I don't know if you can understand me.
I can.
You can. It's important to think in terms of a number of options, a number of actions. Educating people about how the alternatives are better. Educating people about better lawn care, how that's better for the environment and the lawn and butterflies. Educating people about the health of the worker. Doing what you're doing, having that conversation, having a public conversation is great. Raising consciousness. That makes it easier for someone like Iris to talk to her neighbors, gives them something to refer to. And do the demonstrations of the new equipment and make it easier somehow for the landscapers to buy that stuff. Talk it up, have an evolution of this consciousness before you talk about enforcement. And you can begin with something very gentle, like a ticket and a registration to do business in the city and a pledge that you're going to reduce the noise and use the things properly and use Reiki when you can. Start easy and grow. That's how enforcement becomes accepted and effective.
Yeah, I'll add to that, Iris. One thing that we found apart, I mean, Rick knows this very well, and he's talked to a lot of the things that we're doing, and Karen knows too. Karen's participated in some of our workshops, but having a workshop to bring these issues to the fore, inviting neighbors so that they understand all these things, can help create that common ground for discussion, you know, and having people who really understand what are the dangers of those emissions, what are the dangers of the noise, of vibration, how do they affect worker health, you know, because workers are very, very vulnerable to these health effects, but also the public, and certainly all the vulnerable groups. We had a woman that we tried to help down in Texas several years ago now with an autistic child who just went crazy when the landscapers came in. And, you know, there's all kinds of stories out there. The problem is trying to, you know, raise awareness and bring the study to the fore. And then you have an industry, a commercial industry that's quite resistant. And there's structural issues there that make things very difficult. You know, the business owners often pick up workers at a truck stop, hand them these pieces of equipment and tell them to start them up. You know, they're not employees. So investing in things like education and training on electric equipment, for instance, that is more expensive and a real investment is very risky because, you know, workers just throw this stuff into the truck, the equipment breaks. They don't know how to handle it, get the kind of runtime. And there's a lot to it that you don't really think of. It's, you know, complex like a lot of other things. So there's ways to approach this, but it's multifaceted. It's not going to be a silver bullet.
I'm muted. Florestine, you have a quick comment, and then Arlene wants to say something. You're muted. You're still muted.
You're not talking to me. Someone else.
Well, yes, to Florestine. We'll be with you in 1 second. Florestine.
My concern is about noise. Where I live, 100 York Street, we're in between, you know, contiguously with the hospitals. And when the EMRs come down the street, sometimes they are so loud, and especially at the intersections. And if you're standing there with people, like people say, you literally get rattled. I mean, the noise is just that loud. So I'm wondering what kind of ordinance does this hospital have, or how is that regulated to increasing it when they're at the intersection or just coming down the street? Because like I said, our building is contiguous with the hospital and the noise is absolutely outrageous. In fact, there's some concern in our building about the noise level because residents and owners have complained. So I was wondering, does the city have some kind of you know, relationship with the hospitals and the EMRs, and how does that work out to maybe not, we don't want to lower it where causing crashes and, you know, with cars on the street, but that it is a, it's a problem. It's a problem.
Yeah, I'm going to address that.
Go ahead, Arlene. You're muted.
Okay. I keep on.
Nope, now you're muted again. Okay, nice, good.
Let me tell you, in terms of ambulances, there are ways to, there are sirens that are less intrusive. And we've been working with hospitals in New York City. So I can get that person the contact in New York City so that you can introduce that. And I think that's very key that people should remember. And in terms of education, one of the things Grow NYC has is a brochure that had been distributed to people, and it's still on our website, to educate them to the dangers of noise and how they can quiet their own lives, but also says to them they have to respect others. It's not just enough to educate people how to protect yourself, but you also have to educate people that you have a responsibility to protect others. Also, on the New York City Department of Environmental Protection website, there are curricula from the lowest grades through high school that anyone can access. We believe that children should be taught about the harmful effects of noise. And let's not forget the enrichment and the health impact of quiet and the sounds of nature. Let's not forget that. So if you go to the Department of Environmental Protection, you will get some a look at the sound and noise module. And someone has just put on Grow NYC, our website, the Department of Environmental Protection has sound and noise module, an educational program. And if that person will contact me, I'll get her in contact with the people in New York City that have been working on the ambulance sounds, which have increased considerably during the pandemic. We know there could be quieter, less intrusive sounds, and that's what we should be employing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dawn, perhaps you could tell us the correct person to consult with at city government to discuss the issue of ambulance sirens, and maybe Karen can consult on that, because Karen, after all, is a doctor at the hospital. And in the ER department where the ambulances come to, I'm sure you hear a lot of ambulance noise too, and you, whatever. Anyway, so by the way, we invited the Department of Public Works and the health department and everybody else to come to this meeting. I realize that they cannot always make time for us, but we will reach out to them. So thank you everybody for bringing up all these noise issues. I already had concerns about airplanes and helicopters and fireworks and motorcycles and trucks and all this stuff, but I didn't think about sirens because we don't hear as many of those in our neighborhood. So thanks, Floristein. That's why people on this board are supposed to live everywhere in the city so that we can represent everybody. Okay, who's next?
We have a great location. I mean, it is ideal location, but these sirens, they got to decrease. Terrible.
Yeah. Okay. Kathy?
I'm still reeling from the presentation that showed the health effects, like in depth, because I could understand health effects to your actual auditory nerve, but the fact that it affects so many other systems in the body really struck me, because especially in our cities, we have so many people with health issues. They get attributed to a single cause, for diet, for example, is often like the only culprit of, you know, causing diabetes in the popular conception. And so it just really struck me that that from a public health perspective, kind of